It is critical you pay attention at this time. The following program is being broadcast to all fans of Nova and for the preservation of the Zandarian homeworld's culture. I am the world mind and I am turning control over to my human host.
Welcome to a new episode of Zandar Radio. I'm Doug Smith, also known online as Nova64, and I run the Nova Prime page at novaprimepage.com. In February, we saw the release of Champions No. 4 with Sam Alexander Nova. My mini review is that it's still slow, to me at least. The involvement with the X-Men and their mutant island nation was the part I found most intriguing. And it doesn't feel right that I'm more interested in the happenings of another title when I should be excited about the comic I actually paid for. The team learns who has betrayed them, and that particular plotline did move forward. However, the main story of Kamala's Law is still the focus, and it doesn't move along very quickly. And if I were reading this title for the first time, I honestly wouldn't know very much about what the characters can do power-wise and who they are. All I really know is that they are teenagers on the run from the law, and they stand around a lot. Guardians of the Galaxy No. 11 also came out in February. I'm still enjoying this series very much. The team prepares for their final battle against the Dark Olympians on the desolate planet that we first saw in Annihilation. We get to see Rich Rider Nova reflect on his mission from the Annihilation War while having a discussion with his therapist. A bit slower issue in terms of action, but has further insight into Rich's thinking, and I feel it really stays in character. I'm happy to say that I have received listener feedback on the last episode. Let's go to the Champions of Xandar Radio segment.
Champions of Xandar Radio.
The feedback comes from Everett Starr, who sent the following message in Facebook. Quote, "If you are a fan of old school Nova, please listen to this great show. You can listen to it in front of your children because that language is always clean." Unquote. Thanks, Everett. I do try to keep things clean. It's easy to do when I'm talking about such an awesome thing like comics. That love even keeps things clean when the round table is talking about that jerk Diamond Head. If you'd like to share how you became a Nova fan, review a recent comic with Nova in it, or have feedback and suggestions on the podcast, I'd love to hear it and share it in a future episode. Click on the record message at novaprimepage.com/podcasts.asp and record your comments. So now let's go to the Nova Newsroom for updates on the human rocket.
The Nova Newsroom.
Let's begin the news by taking a look at Nova-related titles scheduled to be released in May. The 14th issue of Guardians of the Galaxy, a team featuring Rich Rider Nova, is expected to arrive on May 12th. Here is Queen Adora with the solicitation.
A whole galaxy of trouble, as half the team defends the Kree Skrull throne world against a deadlier threat than they've ever faced before, the other half investigates a terrifying sacrificial cult on a mysterious planet with the power to plunge the universe into war. Plus, a new space hero joins the team. No way.
The 7th issue of The Champions, which includes Sam Alexander Nova, has a release date scheduled for May 19th. Again, here's Queen Adora with the issue's solicitation.
Change the world, the Kamala Khan. The Champions are playing dirty to beat Roxxon at their own game, including implanting two of their own as interns to take down the corporation from within. But in order to earn the trust of their cutthroat Roxxon supervisors, they'll have to deliver an unwilling spokesperson, Kamala Khan. Will Ms. Marvel agree to become the face of a company and a law that she hates, or is it too high a price to pay for victory?
And coming out of the Heroes Reborn event, which features a universe where the Squadron Supreme is the major team and not the Avengers, is Young Squadron No. 1. Is scheduled for release on May 26th. And for a final time, here's Queen Adora with the solicitation.
the Squadron Supreme of America have taken root in the hearts and minds of all, but none more so than a trio of youthful champions who call themselves the Young Squadron. Kid Spectrum, Sam Alexander, Girl Power, Kamala Khan, and the all-new Falcon, Miles Morales, are here to fight for true justice and the American flag. Or are they? Beneath the flashy facade of colorful adventure, something grim is stirring and Deadpool is determined to bring it to light.
The Topps Company released a huge amount of Nova digital cards in its Marvel Collect app. The company released the Hop On and Hold On set, with Rich Rider Nova appearing on two cards. He also appears on two cards of the Honor Them set. Sam Alexander Nova appears on a large number of cards in the Platinum set. Sam appears in three cards as the main figure. He also appears in the background of three Speedball cards, three Captain America cards, and three Scarn cards. Sam and Rich appear in separate cards in the comic cover set. In the Glorious set, Rich Rider Nova appears on two of the cards, and he also appears in three cards in the combat set. And Rich's helmet goes solo on one of the cards in the WinterCon set. As has become pretty standard practice lately, the multiple cards in the same set use the same art but with different color borders. Unfortunately, Topps has become more reliant on using the same art not only for the same set, which is understandable, but now across multiple sets. But the app and most of the cards are free, so it's hard to complain too much. As always, if you're interested, images of the items mentioned in this news segment can be found at novaprimepage.com.
Fan theories and what ifs.
The premise of this segment is to try to fix continuity errors or speculate on dropped storylines featuring Nova. This episode is a bit different than normal. Instead of a look at what could have been, I'm going to talk about what was before there was a Nova. I'm going to take a look at Marv Wolfman's prototype character that would later evolve into Nova. Super Adventures was a superhero fanzine created by Dave Herring. He later turned over the fanzine to his friend Marv Wolfman after number 2 had come out. In issue number 3, Marv and his friend Len Wein introduced a new character called The Star. The Star was a doctor named Dentine who came across the crash site of an alien spaceship. This ship was piloted by a criminal from the planet Orion 2 named Kraken Rue. An interesting note is that the story did not actually feature a costume for the Star, which was an unusual step at that time for a new superhero. Also, the design of Rue's starship features elements that would later show up in Roman Day's Nova Prime starship, years later in The Man Called Nova. It's essentially a smaller, stubbier version of Day's giant ship. In Rue's ship, Dentine found a container of pills which gave him a different superpower for 5 minutes at a time. This wide array of powers included flight, energy blasts, and energy absorption, among many others. He was also fortunate to find a small device which created new pills when needed. With these powers, Dentine became a founding member of the superhero team named the Law Legion. The Star was not in a large number of issues. However, in an offset supplement to Super Adventures number 6, Wolfman and Wein evolved both the Star and Kraken Rue. During his teleportation to prison on his homeworld, Rue's energy merged with cosmic streams, and he became a powerful being called the Celestial Man. In a showdown between the Celestial Man and the Law Legion, Dentine got split into two versions of himself. Kraken Rue absorbs one of the stars, while the leader of the Legion, the Brain, altered the remaining star into a new hero called Black Nova. Black Nova had all of the pill's various powers, now permanently contained in his body. However, a pair of sky skates had to be created to replace his lost power of flight. Black Nova was featured in only a couple of issues before his death in Super Adventures number 9, when he sacrificed his life in a crashing airship in order to save the Law Legion. One of the most impactful changes to the Star was a new costume. Black Nova's new look is clearly a prototype version of Rich Rider Nova's uniform seen years later. Due to the fanzine being in black and white, the costume's colors of black/blue and yellow are not seen, but the look is unmistakable. The number of starbursts on the chest is 5 compared to Nova's 3, and Black Nova's helmet has antennae instead of a red star. Black Nova's helmet was based on the helmet design of a Doctor Strange villain named Tibero. Years later, Marv Wolfman worked with artist John Romita Sr. to streamline the Black Nova costume into Nova's uniform. A new helmet design, less starbursts, along with a comet streak inspired by the cartoon character Mighty Mouse, completed the new look for Nova. Marv also took some of the cosmic elements from the Star and Black Nova, along with obviously new elements, into the origin for Rich Rider Nova in The Man Called Nova number 1. And that's it for this episode segment. I'd like to continue to invite anyone who might have their own theory on something or would like me to take a shot at it to please use the record message button at novaprimepage.com/podcasts.asp to send it in. Or feel free to submit it by email. The address is xandarradio@gmail.com. Coming up is the Learn More in Studio 64 segment featuring an interview with Nova writer Jerry Duggan.
Learn More in Studio 64.
Welcome to the Learn More in Studio 64 segment. I'm thrilled to welcome a writer who has worked on multiple versions of Nova, Jerry Duggan. Welcome to the podcast, Jerry.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, one thing I'm always curious about is how creators found their interest in comics and what led them to be a professional in that field. Have you always been a comic reader?
Yes, I was, and I am. My father was a commuter. I grew up in New Jersey, and he would swing by the newsstand in Hoboken, where he changed trains, and grab himself a evening paper. And, you know, this was when comic books were on spinner racks at newsstands, and he would just grab whatever was there. So I got a pretty good education, you know, on Marvel and DC mostly back then. My preference was for Marvel, but I would read anything. And probably my secret origin was to actually read the tabloid paper too. So this was the days of, you know, Headless Body Found in Topless Bar, and you know, it was, you know, in 80s, you know, there was a lot of sort of the end of the Italian mafia, and so that, you know, that they were each equally as engrossing, the comic books and the tabloids.
Yeah, you said that, and I had a flashback to those kind of things. So, yeah.
I mean, that, you know, like I remember Vinny the Chin Gigante, you know, Gigante, who would, you know, wander the village and sort of let himself be photographed muttering in a bathrobe and sort of, you know, throwing off anyone that, I don't know how much he was really throwing anyone off, but, you know, that in theory, his idea was he was going to act like a crazy person and nobody would ever think that he could really, you know, be the head of a crime family.
Right.
So, you know, I was getting Hulk, Batman, Spider-Man, Nova, you know, and then obviously everything that was sort of happening in the city at that point.
Well, and then, you know, you're one of those fans that got to do a dream job as far as us other fans are concerned. as I understand, you worked at one of the premier comic book stores there in LA, Golden Apple Comics.
Yeah. Well, that was my first job. Well, actually, my first job was a paperboy of all crazy things. But my second job was at a comic shop in New Jersey that's not around anymore. And then I went off to I was reading all through grade school, middle school, high school. I definitely got out of the habit in college. There just wasn't enough money, and comics was going in a place that I at that time I was not the hugest fan of. But then arriving in Los Angeles 20 years ago to pursue a writing career, you know, I dipped back in, but I also was able to, you know, I saw Golden Apple. You'd never seen anything like it. It really was like a supermarket for comic books and pop culture. And there was no help wanted sign in the window, but I walked in and I said, could I leave an application just in case you're hiring? I'd come to town. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job, and I didn't have prospects for either. So I knew I was on borrowed time. I had to find a job really quickly. So, I caught Bill in the right mood, or I charmed him with my nonsense, and he said, I'll try you for 2 weeks. So, and that turned into a couple of years, and really you couldn't have asked for more sort of dumb luck, right place, right time. I had thought I would need to get a job, save up for a car, then get production work. But what I had not counted on was sort of the eye of Sauron here in Hollywood had you know, was falling over comic books at that time. So it became really a nexus point for comics, for creators, for fans, and for people that were trying to exploit all this IP on the screen. You know, every day we had, you know, writers, actors, directors in there. And, you know, that's how I ended up meeting many of my friends. And actually, then some of my friends I would later work with, like Brian Posehn and Patton Oswalt, and through them, I started working at the production company that was producing Mr. Show at the end there, and doing a bunch of other TV stuff. So I was getting all of a sudden then writing credits that were invaluable, and production experience that was invaluable. And that's actually how I met my wife too. So, you know, it was if Bill had sort of turned me away there, you know, I don't know which, you know, there's a sad what if story probably.
Yeah. Well, most of the what if stories usually end up sad. So
I'm yeah, that's true.
Glad to see you didn't end up that way. So.
Right on.
So once you were professional and were writing into the comics, I'm kind of curious, how did you make that transition to comics specifically?
It was a little bit more mysterious than, you know, there was certainly no like game plan into comics, especially for someone like me that can't draw. You know, if you can write and draw, you can write your own ticket, basically. I was very interested in trying to make independent comic books, you know, before that became the path for, you know, IP to have an easier chance to get to the screen. So I had written a screenplay with my buddy Brian, and it was about Santa Claus after the apocalypse. And we quickly found that as charmed as people were, nobody was going to make that movie at that time. And we just said, let's scrap it and then let's reimagine it as a comic book. And that was all we wanted to do. We just wanted to get the story out there into the world. And that led to my working with Phil Noto on a separate a comic book called The Infinite Horizon. And, you know, that slowly began to give me my bones at Image. And one thing led to another. And even with, a writing partner that had a TV career, both in front of the camera and behind the camera, it still took 5 or 6 years of us knocking on doors at Marvel and DC to get any sort of traction. I think they were probably rightfully concerned, you know, are these guys comic book writers, or are they people trying to, you know, like trick us somehow? And, you know, we earned it. We worked really hard. There is, you know, it's not the same discipline, you know, for anyone that does either prose writing or script writing. It's a very, very different discipline. You know, my process really briefly is I write a script, I make the editors happy, I try to be boring in real life and exciting on the page. It goes to the artist. They are free to, you know, there are guardrails. There are things I need that I shout out in script, but I say, if you see a better way to do it, go for it. And then the art comes back to me and I rewrite it before it goes to letters. So, you know, that's the magic of comics, right? Is the artist is probably going to have a better idea about how to sort it. And I think I've gotten good at it now. You know, I don't know how many comics I've written. It's, you know, hundreds and hundreds. And, you know, I'm really having a lot of fun on X-Men right now, that, you know, collaborating. We finally really feel like we have a proper writer's room too, with Jonathan and all the other X-Men writers. It's a blast.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's always the important thing, is just, you know, you're, it sounds like you're having a great time doing it and you got a good support system in place. So yeah, really can't ask for more than that.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that when you started on Nova, the Sam Alexander version, one thing that I noticed right away is you've had this focus on the theme and importance of family. I was kind of wondering, how do you see Sam and his family and what they mean to each other?
Well, the great thing about Sam is that he is an inexperienced hero. And that was what I loved most about that, having gone from Deadpool into Nova. And I think Marvel was sort of kicking the tires going, you know, is this a one-trick pony? Is it just a Deadpool guy, or do we have someone that might be able to sort of have some longevity and stick around and write some other parts of the handbook? And so at that time, Steve Wacker was the editor that hired me, but his, you know, life was changing. I think I only did one or two issues for him before Ellie Pyle became the editor on the book. And, you know, we had a young character that had a more or less a secret identity. And, you know, there's not enough of that in comics. And so to sort of give him, you know, the Spider-Man treatment, the early days Spider-Man treatment, was a real joy. You know, and inexperienced characters make mistakes. And, you know, if you throw Captain America at the same problem, he's probably going to have not as hard a time as Sam might, because he just doesn't have the experience. And that's why I cherished Sam, was here's a kid who's trying to not get flunked in school and managing his, you know, responsibility as to the Earth as a Nova Corps member. You know, who wouldn't have fun doing that?
Right. It's, yeah, it's what always seemed funny was how he balanced, like you say, school and his friends and his family and not getting killed fighting supervillains. And
oh, good. Yeah. And we had wonderful artists, you know, we had David Baldion and Paco Medina, and, you know, that really, you know, set the tone for the book. You know, they have such a fun, high energy style that, you know, if you can, you know, make sure that you have somebody worth punching that needs punching, and then, you know, spend a couple of pages where, you know, Nova wins, but Sam might lose, that feels like a winning combination to tell some fun stories. And that's also sort of where I, you know, got rebitten with the cosmic bug.
Oh, yeah, you know, and that's one of the other things I really liked about your run with Sam, is you seemed like you were taking him on this cosmic trip as well. And then we got to see some of the backstory of his father, Jesse, who'd been, you know, he seems like he'd been missing for quite a while. And, but one of the things I love that you added to Nova's equipment or his, you know, abilities is that the Black Nova helmet was able to track other Novas, whether they were the gold helmets or the black helmets.
Yeah.
And whether they were living or not. Was that simply a kind of a device so that you could get him to different planets and adventures, or was there a long range plan with that ability?
Well, I think a little of both. You know, it felt like it was good for Sam, who was very much cut off from sort of the Nova lore, to be able to go, hey, this is a serious responsibility. Like, not everyone survives being a Nova, you know, is always a good way to raise the stakes. And obviously, the, you know, you're looking for something to give you that sort of book chapter feel, you know, like one issue we go out and we learn about this Nova, and another one this Nova. You know, what can we do to sort of give ourselves a beginning, middle, and end while we're telling an ongoing story? It felt like a good device.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, easily could have turned into a Tales of the Black Nova Corps.
Right.
Or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and speaking of the Black Novas, your Original Sin storyline, that was, for me, I thought that was an awesome story, because we got to see a lot of backstory on the Black Novas.
Right.
I thought that was great, how we saw that they had been actually a rogue squad of Nova Corps members. And then the nice thing was they got busted by, you know, Jesse, but instead of getting rid of them, they incorporated them actually into the Corps as kind of a black ops unit.
Yeah.
And I really like that Black Nova bunker. I thought that was great.
Oh yeah. The places, you know, when you get to put a cool location together, you know, that one really popped. You know, I love that. That's still out there as far as I know. I didn't get any notices that was, you know, zeroed out. So maybe that'll come back someday, you know. That'd be a hoot. You know, that's always a blast. You know, my recollection, and it's been years now, but, you know, the cool thing that we were encouraged, these were my first Marvel retreats, and we were really looking for ways to, you know, make use of this great story where we can sort of reimagine some people's alignments, you know, finding out that they had done something, you know, all these secrets. And, you know, for Sam, I knew it was going to be important because, you know, he had just become friendly with the Watcher, and then we were killing him and taking his eyes. So there was no way that we weren't, you know, I was even concerned, you know, would this tonally not be what we wanted to pursue with a book like this? But we made it work. And, you know, I really like the issue when he's on the moon too, and, you know, visiting the Watcher's home. So yeah, that felt like that was, you know, the start of sort of a big story for Sam that I think still continues, you know?
Right. Since that seemed so well developed, that Black Nova backstory that we got to see in that arc, is that, I know some writers like to, even though we may never see all the things that they do, some will create this elaborate backstory just as kind of a way to stay focused on it. And then there's some, like Dan Abnett was telling me, that some elements he just create the concept and throw a piece of it out there so he could revisit it later.
Yeah. I think for me, the idea that there were sort of that, you know, not a hit squad per se, but, like, you know, that there were sort of, pun intended, black hat Novas, you know, I think anytime you can sort of complicate matters. I mean, I came back to this a little bit with the Novas in Guardians when I was asked to do that. I said, well, you know, what if they were sort of scoundrels, you know, that they didn't all have sort of the alignment that you might want. You know, it's a little more NYPD blue, or, you know, maybe that's not the, maybe the Shield is sort of the better idea there, you know, that there would be some Novas that, you know, might, sure, they're going to rescue you, and then they're going to look through the cargo hold and see what you have.
You go through your wallet.
A little something for us. And that's fun. That's a good complicating factor when not everyone has the same alignment.
Right, the same altruistic.
Yes.
As we got past that, then there was the quest for Jesse Alexander, and Sam finally tracked him down. if I remember right, this was right at the end of your Nova run. You got the Alexander family reunited.
Yeah, my recollection is, and you know, I certainly not to was that I sort of pitched the Twilight Zone ending of we get Jesse back. Oh no, it's not Jesse, and that would have been the way to sort of bring us into a new era that I knew I was not going to exploit. I knew I was going on, you know, that I would be leaving Nova at that point. But so I was definitely writing to my end. And that at the time, I think Nick Lowe was the senior editor on the book. And he was saying, that's great. Would you mind if we sort of saved that reveal to open the next arc? And I said, yeah, of course. That's one of the things that, you know, if he thinks it works better there, that's cool by me. But it was always intended as giving Sam a Twilight Zone ending.
Okay. Yeah, I had been wondering about that too. But also around that time, I think it was around that time, the Secret Wars event had come up. And, you know, your tie-in series was the Infinity Gauntlet. And holy cow, that was, in my opinion, that was the best tie-in. And I actually enjoyed that more than the main Secret Wars series. Just awesome.
Oh, fun. Yeah. I mean, look, it was a joy, you know, that was Secret Wars was a real wonderful opportunity across the board for everyone. You know, Jonathan laughed and said, sorry, I'm canceling everyone's books. But the real truth was, you know, that this was an opportunity to remake whatever it was that you were doing at the time. And so at that moment, I knew I had a year with Hulk. And so Hulk was becoming a Western called 1872. And Nova, we knew, was going to be paused as well, but that we would have a few issues and I would have Dustin Weaver as a collaborator. He was co-writer for that series. And we just said, let's just blue sky it. We're going to sort of tell a Walking Dead story about a family of Novas. Because I think you sort of hit on this earlier. We were having a sort of fun time telling a family story. What happens if we bring that flavor to the front of it? And now we have a whole family of Novas. And it was very easy. I think I just said it would be great if we had, you know, we have a lot of white Novas. What I don't care what this family is. You know, is there a version where we should look at having a non-white, non-Earth, I think was my note. And Dustin turned in these drawings. Nobody had a note. And Dustin said, I'd like there to be a canine unit. And I said, of course there should be a canine unit. I will take credit for that idea for the remainder of my days. But it was obviously Dustin's idea. And yeah, you know, at that point too, because he was co-writing it, I wrote a first issue script, and I think that was the last script he really got. After that, he got very much sort of a Marvel style breakdown of what I thought we needed and what we could get out of it. And that was that the stones could create entropy stones. And that's how we got the Death Stone in there. But yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering how that collaborative thing worked with him being the co-plotter. So, but it sounds like it went really smooth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Boy, the quality really shows, especially, you know, the concepts, the art, even I thought the coloring was just, to me, it felt unique.
Yep.
It was just wonderful.
Yeah, very sort of single malt Dustin Weaver.
And, you know, one of the things between the two, and, you know, I could just be making connections in my head that are just, you know, I'm wired wrong or something. But over in Nova, when his helmet was damaged by the Hulk,
yeah,
and then who later became Doc Green, the two of them go to fix the helmet, and they go to Xandar,
right?
Which I'm assuming probably had been a former colony world of the original Xandar, because you had all those Annihilation refugees. And I'm assuming maybe they settled there.
Yeah, there was sort of a scavenger planet that, like, at the time it was funny. I forget when Xandar got kind of beaten up and destroyed.
Which time?
That was the note. Yeah, that was the note, was we can't find that we ever put it back together, so it's going to be broken. And we said, great. Actually, I really like that, the relationship that Sam had with Doc Green. You know, I knew that I had a year of Hulk, and that Hulk was going to be super smart. That was my inheritance. I didn't have any say about that. And I sort of was a little sour for the first day, sort of going, boy, I really wish I had like a, you know, rampaging angry Hulk. And then I sort of realized, no, this is a gift. And this is going to be great, because I'm only going to have a year of Hulk. And that the heartbreak we can get away with here is that, yeah, no, we do a Flowers for Algernon story where the Hulk knows he's smart and is, you know, in control, and Banner is minimized. But, you know, he also discovers during the course of this that he's going to be losing his smarts, and, you know, what does that do to him? So, you know, along the way, that was that was another gift too, brought to me by Secret Wars.
Yeah, and you really took off with it too, because their interactions are just a riot.
Well, we tried an odd couple of these guys, you know, and bump them up against each other in interesting ways, you know. Otherwise, feels like we're kind of spinning our wheels.
Yeah, and you got to see through, and especially we're seeing it through Doc Green's eyes. You get to see the youthful exuberance of Sam, who just loves being a Nova. And I think with Doc Green, you know, we as the readers get to see that through him.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I really like that. Well, one of the things I noticed over in the Infinity Gauntlet, since we were talking about Xandar, you know, and again, here's where those wires may be just frayed in my head. The chunk of Xandar that's on Battle World is similar in shape to, there's a chunk of Xandar missing,
right,
when the Hulk and Sam go there. I always wondered, was that the same chunk that's in Battle World, or is that just some kind of weird coincidence?
You know, I honestly forget at this point. It may have been a discussion that took place that I'd like to think we sort of sorted that, but maybe we didn't.
Well, again, it's probably one of them fanboy things where I just, yeah, we can connect this and we can make that work.
Yeah.
So, thanks for humoring me on that.
Yeah, of course.
So then, you know, the next time I saw you working on Nova, it was Rich Rider.
Right.
Over in Guardians. And we kind of, and this, you know, right, this was right after he came back from the Cancerverse.
Yeah.
And so he goes looking for his brother, Robert. And, you know, that I like, and it's not, you know, it's like you hit this really quick and it's like, wow, you know, I hadn't really thought about, you know, what about the Novas who had been left behind? And especially since Robert was one of them.
Yeah, when the Nova Force turned off. Yeah.
And so Robert, from what he had said, he had been trying to restart the Nova Force and had even developed that prototype helmet.
Yeah.
How did you see Rich as a character? Because you wrote him really well and stayed really, to my opinion, in character. So I was wondering how you felt about him.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, an amazing opportunity to sort of ask the question, oh, hey, what happened to these other Novas? Oh, we thank God nobody has killed Rich, but he must not have a helmet anymore. And what does that do? And, you know, that the stars sort of aligned to make a villain really out of a character that obviously had deep context, you know, that's the, you know, and obviously I don't think he's a villain, but he's a villain in this story. He's the hero of his own story, you know? And so that was the coolest thing to me, was sort of the way that I guess you might try to explain it today would be, hey, he, you know, here he is. It's a little homeland analog, you know, that there's this character who, you know, has been turned, and he has a very valid point. You know, where was the rescue mission?
Right. It's the, you know, it's not one of those mustache twirling moments where he just, you know, it was a.
Yeah.
And that, I usually think that makes the best villains, is like you say, in their head, they're the heroes of their own story, and their motivations, you can see them from both sides. And those, I like those because they're a little more complex. And the fact that it's Rich's brother just adds that kind of, you know, tragic feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking a little bit earlier about the new Nova Corps that you had created. I think you started that in Deadpool, is that right? With Scott Adsit joining in?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of a funny story too. You know, I knew I was leaving Deadpool, and I also knew that if I left Scott Adsit behind, that the next administration, whoever they may be, would probably kill him. And he was a buddy in real life. So I was sort of needing to sort of go, well, how do I make it so that this stakes character in Deadpool doesn't end up getting murked by the new administration? And the answer became, well, I'm going to Guardians. Someone's going to have to ask me if it's okay if they can kill Scott Adsit. And so that's how Scott became a Nova.
Yeah, you know, I always like when creators create these characters based on people they know.
Right.
So yeah, I like that you made the effort to save him. So that's I didn't know any of that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So this Nova Corps, was that something that maybe Robert Ryder had started, or was this just, you know, they kind of came out of the blue?
Oh, yeah, we established that there were the Novas that Scott Adsit joined.
Yeah.
They were sort of put together like almost like a UN.
Right.
You know, there were member states sort of giving space money to reboot the Nova Corps, but that we wanted to make sure that there were a clear sort of delineation. There would be powered Novas and they would be more special, and then there was sort of the grunts, and you know, I thought we did a good job of that, and also became a way of bringing the Bakian family into the 616.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, because that the Nova Corps that you were forming, like you had mentioned, they were they were criminals and your societal malcontents. And Yeah. Oh, you even brought the Guardians in there.
Yep.
Another thing I wanted to thank you for doing that was, I don't get to say societal malcontents in a sentence very much. So.
Right.
So as you were talking about, you know, it allowed you the chance to bring Eve back over. Was that the same Eve from Gauntlet? I always kind of wondered, since she was pregnant, and I'm assuming that was with Anwan.
Yeah.
Is that because they had both been using the Infinity Gauntlet in their series?
I think this is just our version of that Eve, is how we looked at it, just going, hey, you know, with the exception of Miles, you know, I think that might be the only character that really got lifeboated over.
A universal save. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I loved Eve. I thought she...
Oh, yeah. She's fantastic.
She is just awesome. Is she based on anybody or...
No, not at all. It was, you know, Dustin drew the family, and then I borrowed... There's a sort of a lot of fake relatives or non-blood relatives, I should say, in my family. And so I borrowed the name of my aunt and uncle. They came to this country. Well, he did as an immigrant, and I just swiped the Bakian name as a tribute, loving tribute.
Wow, that's You know, that's, again, I love when creators are able to bring in their real life into characters.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, and how would you compare all three Novas, like a Rich, Sam, and Eve? Because they're just so different.
Yeah, I think they're really different, which is fun. You know, obviously, Rich started as the sort of inexperienced Sam type character and, you know, has become sort of now the... I'm not sure I'd call him grizzled veteran, but certainly a veteran. And I always felt like, you know, there's a lot to explore with Eve still. And, you know, I'm hoping that we get a chance to do that. But she was really felt like a general in the way that she was conducting herself, especially when, you know, she was guarding the Power Stone. It was a big secret. And, you know, obviously... doing a very difficult job under difficult circumstances.
Right. Yeah. And again, I liked her interaction with Rich, especially. It seems like that's two people that they've gone through so much, especially, you know, Rich with all the wars and big cosmic events he's gone through. It seemed like those two they'd hit it off really well.
Yep.
But you can also see maybe a certain tension between them, because each one I can see believing that they're right.
Yes, 100%.
So I'm curious, what projects are you currently working on that our listeners can look forward to?
Right now I'm on the island nation of Krakoa, having a blast on X-Men, and I have a couple of creator-owned projects happening later this year through Image. One is the return of my comic book with John McCrae called Dead Eyes, and the other is a new original graphic novel from a newcomer to comics, but who I think is just fantastic, Scott Buon Cristiano. And so we have that to look forward to, and I think it's a real interesting time to be an X-Men fan, especially Al right now. Al Ewing is writing both Guardians and Sword, you know, the cosmic mutant book. So, you know, if the cosmic part of the handbook is your jam, you know, there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I really love Al's work on Guardians.
Yep, me too.
Really good, rich writer over there. But those sound like some really awesome projects. And I do encourage everyone to pick them up as they come on the shelves. I was wondering, do you have any closing comments you'd like to say to the Nova fans out there, Jerry?
You know, thanks for reading Nova. I was always a huge fan, and now I get to, you know, continue to collaborate, you know, on all things Nova in the big room at Marvel. And, you know, I think whoever your favorite Nova is, you know, you're bound to see them turn up sooner rather than later. But I had a great time on my Nova stories, and I hope you guys enjoyed them.
Oh, yeah, I certainly know I did. And I want to thank you again for talking with me today.
Yeah, you bet.
It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Final thoughts.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Xandar Radio. I hope you enjoyed it and look forward to receiving your feedback. Send your comments as a voice message, and it may be played in a future episode. And of course, you're always welcome to send an email to xandarradio@gmail.com or leave a post at the Xandar Radio Facebook page. All avenues can be reached at novaprimepage.com/podcasts.asp. I'd like to extend a big thank you to Jerry Duggan for a fun interview. The next episode of Xandar Radio will be released in the first week of April with the latest Nova news, fun features, and a new Studio 64 roundtable session where we begin discussing Nova's second solo series. Until then, have a blue blazing day.
This is the World Mind. I am taking back control from my human host. Xandar Radio is a Studio 64 production of the Nova Prime Page. This program is the property of Doug Smith. Nova and other characters mentioned are trademarks of Marvel Characters, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Music heard in the program is by Chad Crouch. A link to his site and the license can be found at novaprimepage.com.